Welcome to the Philip Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2 p.m. Central Time. Today is August 5th. So we've had the hard fork for Ethereum. In early trading, it was down pretty significantly, and then it reversed that initial decline and has finished up on the day. So this is completing a very short-term range in the region of the $2,500 level. And it's at least helping to negate in the short term the potential for a buy the rumor, sell the news event ahead of that hard fork. So putting every other factor aside, the hard fork announcement introduces an element of limited supply to Ethereum. So that's one of the reasons why investors are becoming a bit more enthused, and it's certainly looking likely that there's potential for additional upside here. Then we can also look at what's been happening with Bitcoin, because at one point today it was down in the region of 2,000, and now it's up in excess of 1,000. So that's an upside key reversal, where it went to a new reaction low and then is going to, well, looking quite likely to close above the high of the previous day. It's confirming support in the region of the lows from yesterday, and now it's pushing higher from here. So this is also looking like an orderly consolidation in the region of the upper side of the 3 month range, and potentially here we're likely to see some additional upside. So this is a meaningful event, and it suggests that there is potential here for a further pop on the upside. So now the question is, how much further will it go? And that's an impossible question to answer. But certainly it's going to be about liquidity, because obviously you need a lot of money to flow into cryptocurrencies in order to really move the price. The entire market cap of the sector is now about $1.5 trillion. Back in April, it was well in excess of $2 trillion. So in order to get Bitcoin up from $40,000 to $60,000, we would need to see a migration of in the order of $500 billion into the sector, because not all of it will end up in Bitcoin. And there's the additional point that Ethereum is outperforming. And when we look at that ratio, well, we've seen in the past, particularly following the massive appreciation of Ethereum in the latter stages of the acceleration in 2017, where Ethereum kept going even though Bitcoin was pulling back. Well, then there were other periods, like in 2018, when Ethereum did well despite the overall downtrend. But this has been a range that's been forming now for most of the last 3 or 4 months, and it's looking increasingly likely that Ethereum will be able to appreciate further from here. So there is the scope, at least, that this introduction of a limited supply argument to Ethereum may in fact have a beneficial effect in the eyes of investors overall. And of course, then the success with which the hard fork was initiated today, where it went off without a hitch, is also supportive of the view that further enhancements to the network will be also achieved without a hitch and successfully initiated. And obviously the big one is the migration to the proof of stake, and potentially at some point next year. Then I think we're at an interesting juncture for oil prices. So we've had prices coming down rather sharply for 3 days, and they steadied somewhat here in the region of $70 today. And there is this argument that Göring and Rosenzweig have been promulgating over the course of the last year, that the big shale properties are close to peaking, or that they may in fact have already peaked. So it's rather interesting that natural gas prices are right in the region of $4 right now. And $4 has been a bit of an area of resistance over the course of the last 5 years. So when we think about the potential that the major shale properties have peaked in production growth, well, then that's potentially a bullish argument. There are a lot of other factors that need to be taken into account, though, to give credence to that prognostication. So, obviously, we've had incredible difficulties in terms of supply chains and supply and demand over the course of the last 15 to 16 months. And the fact that West Texas Intermediate went negative by $40 at one point last year is a good example of that. Then, of course, you had the significant freeze in Texas, where they're just not used to it, and a lot of the infrastructure is not weatherized. So that had an impact on processing facilities for a lot of oil and gas products. So that's still being felt, and now that's been replaced with a heat wave right across a good portion of the western portion of North America. So that's also increased demand for air conditioning. And now, of course, as well, we have the global market for natural gas, because UK natural gas is surging higher, and it's testing the £100 level. And there have been occasions over the course of the last decade when it's got up as high as 80, and on each of those occasions, it's failed. And the only time that it's got anywhere close to current levels in the past was in 2005, and that was not sustained. So we're at an interesting juncture here, because we're looking at ranges that have been going on now for an awfully long time, and it's been a profound bear market for the natural gas price in the USA. Now, we're still at high levels overall in the UK. This is nothing like the price environment that we had prior to the commodity bull market, where prices ebbed and flowed around the or below the £20 level and above the or more or less above the £8 level. So we're at multiples of that now. And of course, we've had the peaking in production from the North Sea over the course of the last 13 to 14 years. So that's a very significant development. We can see overall that it's been a rangy environment, but there have been significant volatility elements, and prices overall are multiples of what they were prior to the bull market. So this is an example of what can happen to prices after a significant peaking event. So it does behoove us to pay attention to what's happening in the natural gas price and additionally in the oil price, because growth in non-OPEC supply has been one of the most profound developments in the energy sector over the course of the last 14 years. This service was, I believe, at least among the first to start to talk about the USA becoming energy independent, and it was one of the primary arguments that we used to talk about a secular bull market. And that did not sound credible to a lot of people back in 2009 and 10 and 11. And then people were grudgingly willing to accept that perhaps North America could become energy independent. And then subsequently, they started to grudgingly accept that perhaps the USA could become energy independent in natural gas, but it would never happen in oil. And then they've become energy independent in both over the course of the last 2 years. So this question about will the unconventional fields that have been aggressively exploited over the course of the last decade, will they peak soon, or do they have more staying power, or is it only a question of drilling and then refracking? These are very important questions, and we don't have an answer for it because it's a new sector, and refracking is still in its infancy, and no one has a really good handle on just how well some of the most prolific portions of these markets can be exploited. So it's interesting also to pay attention to the high beta plays, because if the and again, there is no way to know, but One thing is certain is that Aramco continues to range, and they are much more interested in paying their dividend of 4% than any major supply growth. So the share has been completely inert. Royal Dutch Shell is a major gas player rather than a crude oil player, and the share rebounded reasonably impressively in here this week, but it's still below the $1,500, excuse me, P level, and that's the lower side of the overhead trading range. So it's going to have to sustain a move above the 1500 P level in order to confirm a return to medium-term demand dominance. So it's a major gas player, and it has major gas resources all over the world. And all of that should be bullish because of the demand growth for LNG, because obviously there are big arguments around the world about the need for zero emissions. And I just don't believe they're realizable. Despite the fervor with which they're being propagated, I just do not believe that we can encourage the entire world to break the addiction to fossil fuels in a reasonable time period. And natural gas remains the number one destination for anyone who wants to give up coal. So, because it is reasonable, it might not be as cheap as it used to be, but it's cheap enough, and it's reliable, and it burns clean. So this is certainly something that should be a benefit. But then, of course, you have the antipathy with which the energy sector is being viewed in Europe in particular. And Royal Dutch Shell, well, the big question is, are they really being well served by holding on to a corporate headquarters in the Netherlands? Because they're certainly being pursued for sins all over the world. And these are big, significant factors for these companies. Of course, it will deter them from investing in lots of new supply. So we are seeing mergers and acquisitions. And Royal Dutch Shell is selling their shale. Santos, which is now in the region of the trend mean following the announcement of its acquisition of Oil Search, well, that's going to create a much larger company from an Australian perspective. But I do pay attention to the higher cost producers. So when we think about Suncor Energy, well, they're producing from the Athabasca tar sands, so that's a higher cost production area overall, and this is another share that has yet to push back up into that overhead trading range. When we then think about Petróleo Brasileiro, then this has been a more impressive advance overall, and they have got a drilling program that they've announced in here today, and it might be in a base formation, and it was a chronic decline from the peak in 2008 down to the lows in 2016, and a retest of those lows in 2020, but at least it's held a sequence of higher reaction lows within the base formation. I think the one thing that has been the question about whether we're going to have a commodity-led bull market or not has been this question about the oil market. So if we do in fact see that shale oil has difficulty increasing supply from here and becomes a less competitive force relative to OPEC overall, well then we can anticipate that higher oil prices will be sustained beyond the short term. And that increases the cost of production for just about every other commodity. So the agriculture sector continues to pause here in the region of the trend mean. We've had a significant decline in the coffee price because the frost did not come through as was feared. But we are starting to see that there's renewed interest in orange juice, and it has bounced from the region of the trend mean. So it's not like we're seeing this continued trends upwards in every commodity, but they do seem to be going in a rotational fashion. We had some volatility in the soybean price in the last couple of days. It was up today, but not by in a dynamic manner, and it's still in the region of the trend mean overall. When we look at the stock market, when I was thinking about this today and the similarities that we have with the period immediately after the initial rebound in 2008. So after big declines, you get the number of shares that are trading above their respective 200-day moving averages, it collapses. And in 2009, it got down to an historic low of 2%. So that was a very small number. But over the course of the next 6 months, it went up to 95%. So that was an extremely broad-based rally where just about everything rebounded, and all one had to do was be in the market. And after that occurred, well, then we went into a differentiating phase where people started to look at what the potential was, look at what the problems that were still remaining, and the market started to differentiate between the recovery candidates and those that were more likely to go into a perennial range. And the number of companies that were trading above their 200-day moving average collapsed. But that didn't mean it was the end of the bull market. In fact, it's usually then that's the beginning of the new bull market, where you can see with confidence that the first consolidation has been completed, and this messy period in 2010 and 11 gave way to another significant pop on the upside. So we've had a very similar rebound following the lows, which were a retest of those lows in 2008, over the last year. And there's been a lot of commentary of late about how narrow the breadth is in this market. But it's worth considering that that's normal. We had a really phenomenal advance where we went from a very deep oversold condition to a short-term overbought condition, and the vast majority of shares, almost 90%, were trading above their 200-day moving averages. Now it's about 66%, and it's still falling. So then if we just contrast that with what's happened in the stock market, because there has been a very clear difference. When we think about this period of ranging that occurred in 2010, well, we had this very nice move. It was a doubling in the price, or just about a doubling in the price from the low in 2009 to the initial peak in 2010. And then the market went sideways for at least the next 6 or 7 months and really didn't start trending higher again until the end of 2011. So it was an 18-month consolidation with an upward bias overall, but certainly a subject to quite a lot of volatility. So now we can continue to see that this is still a trending environment on Wall Street. And we've had a very inert environment overall, particularly over the last 2 weeks. And so far, we still have ranges one above another. But the number of shares that are contributing to this uptrend is declining. So we're definitely getting narrower breadth overall. And it's likely that even among the very best performers, we're due some consolidation. That's what that oscillator, in terms of the number of shares above the 200-day moving average, is telling us, that eventually we will get a pause in consolidation and that it will be somewhat deeper than what we've had over the last while. But in order for that to happen, well, it will have to be led by the largest companies because of the weighting that they now represent in the wider market. So Apple has been going sideways for most of the last 3 weeks, and it's still holding up in an admirable manner. And Microsoft has also been firm in here today and is pushing the upper sides of its short-term range. I do think that Google probably deserves the acceleration that it's had over the course of the last few months, and it is still going up in a pretty aggressive manner. But Alphabet overall, well, they're investing tons of money in open-ended research. And when they're talking about over the weekend having developed a time crystal, and there is the contention that they have proven that there are exceptions to Newton's second law of thermodynamics, well, we're going to have an argu well, there's going to be a scientific argument about that. There's just no question of that. But the reality is that they're doing important work, and they will eventually come up with a viable business plan for some of these discoveries that they're making, whether it's in the artificial intelligence or the deep learning, or the kinds of announcements that they've made recently in terms of the protein folding problems. And then they're developing their own quantum computers and autonomous vehicles. And obviously, there are big questions about whether Apple, or excuse me, Alphabet, or Tesla, or some other company are going to solve for that problem and create a massive new, potential venture. But the more important point from a market's perspective is that all of these companies are still steady. And as long as that remains the case, well, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But we do know that when they roll over, they are likely to take the entire market with them, and that that will contribute to a process of mean reversion. And the S&P 500 is currently 10% overextended relative to the trend mean. So it's not chronically overextended, and it could yet become more overextended, but it's certainly a time to start thinking about the potential, at least, that we could have some pause and consolidation. As we look around the world, well, the one thing that I think is also relevant from a foreign exchange perspective is that we're getting a lot of variability in the performance of emerging market currencies. So the Philippine peso has broken a 2-year progression of lower rally highs. So the dollar has now clearly broken out against it. The Thai baht, we have the dollar back at the upper side of its range and are the base formation, arguably. So it's an important area where we could either see some demand starting to come back in for the Thai baht, or the dollar is going to break higher. So we're certainly seeing evidence of markets trading around, not so much about interest rate differentials or growth rates, but around the success with which they're dealing with the pandemic. One thing that I think is relevant to highlight is that the second section in Japan is rolling over. So it has been down now for the last week, and at least it's not coming back in a very dynamic manner, but it is potentially failing in the region of the upper side of this more than 3-year range. So hopefully it's just a consolidation and we'll see support coming through in the short term. But the Nikkei is likely to take its lead from the small caps, and it is right in the region of the trend mean, and it was firmer in here today. So at least this is encouraging action overall, but we will need to see additional evidence. Then we have the rising potential that there are additional variants on top of the Delta variant. I really have a feeling that by the time this pandemic is over, everyone is going to know the Greek alphabet backwards, because there is talk now about the Epsilon variant and the Lambda variant. Well, if we just think about the Greek alphabet, it's alpha, beta, gamma, delta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda. So lambda is the 11th letter of the Greek alphabet. And that would suggest that there are 11 variants, and that it's the 11th one is potentially out there. At least we're starting to hear talk, and no real peer-reviewed evidence, but talk that it's getting around vaccines. So we're still in this kind of environment where there's uncertainty. And against this background, we continue to see central banks talking about needing to raise rates or needing to withdraw their assistance. And the Bank of England was the most recent of those. They were talking in here today about the need to start tapering in the near term. So that was beneficial for the pound, and the UK is further along in opening up than other countries. So that is helping to support the currency. But I think we have to just take it with a grain of salt, because if there are risks that we're going to have more variants popping up, and that is going to represent an additional challenge for governments, and will slow down the pace of opening up, and will further prolong the trend of working from home, well, then that will weigh on economics, and it will necessitate that the liquidity stays in the market longer. So when we hear about central banks laying plans, well, all of those plans, it really reminds me of a birth plan. When my wife was going to hospital for our first child, and we went to the classes with the midwives, and they were saying, "Oh, well, you have to have a birth plan," and that's all well and good until something happens during the delivery process where it goes completely out the window, and then you do what's necessary. And I really feel that that is exactly what's going to happen at the moment with these efforts by central banks to talk about how they're planning to do things in an orderly, predictable manner. But that's 100% dependent upon events being orderly and predictable. And I just have a feeling that they're not likely to be orderly and predictable. So I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.